Grow Great, the podcast, episode 4011. Yep, it's new music. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Kids, my name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Grow Great, the podcast. The website, it's exactly the same, growgreat.com. Today, it's about protecting your space versus expanding your connections. We'll do it next. I appreciate you clicking play. I especially appreciate you if you are a subscriber. Welcome to episode 4011. 4011. You can go to the website, growgreat.com. Just plug in the search this website, plug in that number, 4011, and it will take you right there. Protecting your space versus expanding your connections. CEOs and other top executives, top leaders, they spend a lot of time in their office. Everybody does. Or a conference room. Or some other place that is at their place of business, because top leaders largely live in spaces that we own, if not literally, then figuratively. These are the spaces that we protect. You know, the term gatekeeper, I mean, that speaks to how protective we are of our personal, well, our professional space. We guard it. We protect it. And if we could, we'd build a moat around it and we would install a drawbridge. Can you imagine? It'd be great, wouldn't it? I know many of you are thinking that would be awesome. We could keep everybody out. You know, some of us have protected our spaces, though, even better than that. I mean, we've got those little door locks and you've got to buzz people in, or we've got ID cards that unlock doors. Or maybe it's like NCIS, you know, you hold your eyeball up to some retina reader and, you know, if you don't have the proper credentials, you don't get in. We're locked down. We're loaded. And we allow in only insiders or the people that we have invited. Yeah, but this isn't so much about physical space as it is about emotional and psychological space. It's about headspace. There's a paradox. There's a paradox happening here, because the more we protect our physical space, the more we close in our headspace. It just happens that way. It's why new ideas can be really tough to come by, or why we often get stuck. We often feel stuck. Our field of vision is stuck. Our attention is stuck. We're staring at the same walls. We're staring at the same decor. We're staring at the same people. We've protected our space, and it's the same, just day after day after day. Yeah, Groundhog Day. Yeah, we're living in Groundhog Day. And Groundhog Day is pretty much every day for many CEOs, except unlike Bill Murray's character in the movie, we don't get repeated opportunities to get it right. We just get up day after day and we're battling the same thing. We're battling the same issues. We're confronting the same problems. We're unable sometimes to see our best opportunities because we're stuck with the same field of vision. And we're stuck on the same sound stage. We're hearing the same stuff. Now contrast that with getting out of your office to meet somebody new. I mean, many of us can't remember the last time we did that. We've got our friends, we've got our direct reports, we've got our team members, we've got these people that are associated with us professionally, even if they're not inside the company. I mean, it's like we've hit our limit of people that we're willing to let into our lives. Maybe we're introverted and it's awkward for us to meet somebody new. Maybe we're extroverted and we're meeting lots of new people, but really they're just casual meet and greet kind of encounters. There's not much depth to it. Or we're more likely the ambiverts. Have you heard this term? Ambiverts. We're ambiverts. We're those folks that we're in the middle. We're not really introverted. We're not really extroverted. We're kind of whatever we need to be, given the circumstance or situation. And those of us who are ambiverts, I'm an ambivert, we just do what we've been doing. Unless something jolts us out of our routine, we're going to stick with our routine because it works for us. It's comfortable. We're going to do what we've always done. Enter social media, and I'm only bringing up social media. This isn't about social media, but I'm going to use social media as kind of a, well, it's more than a metaphor, but it is that. So enter social media, and there's some magic that begins to happen. 5 or 10 years ago, I would rarely encounter a top leader. In fact, I would rarely encounter any executive who understood the value of social media. 5 or 10 years ago, most would say, you know, I don't get Facebook. I don't get Twitter. I don't get name the platform. I mean, why would anybody post crap on Facebook? Why would anybody send a tweet? Well, I don't get it, right? The exact same people 5 or 10 years ago would have also said, you know, this whole texting thing, I don't get it. Today, those same people regularly use both, and they don't think twice about it. In fact, I regularly encounter CEOs and other top leaders who confess that they use their cell phone far more for texting than they do for actual talking. It's a cell phone. Doesn't matter. We text on it more. We even may email on it more than we talk on it. Well, that's how our adoption of technology changes our behavior. It happens whether we understand it or not at first. And now those same people who didn't understand it 5 or 10 years ago, they can't live without it. So sitting at his desk, a CEO may take some time out of the day and may go over to the company's Facebook page. You know, just to see what's happening over there. Is anybody posting anything? Any customers have anything to say? And over the course of 15 minutes, his behavior is now drastically changed. Here he is. He's in the castle, right? The moat is all around him. The drawbridge, it's out front. And over the course of that 15 minutes, something has changed, though. Something has triggered in his head. He's open. He's available. Maybe he directly responds to people on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. He's open. He's expansive. All the while being locked down in his office physically. And he logs off, and then more magic happens. That openness and that expansive feeling, it's gone. Immediately, it's gone. I mean, he's now back inside the castle. He is surrounded by the moat. He's back to the mindset of life inside the castle, except this isn't Camelot, and he is not King Arthur. And his direct reports, well, they're not the Knights of the Round Table. My mother used to get vexed with me because as a little kid, I would come home from school, the television would not be turned on, and I would immediately go and I would turn the TV on and then leave the room. She was baffled by this behavior. I still do this. The TV can be on. It's not right now in the yellow studio, but the TV can often be on. I'm not watching it. I'm not even paying attention to it. For me as a kid, and this is carried over even into today's world where I know TV is not nearly what it once was. And in some ways, it's way bigger. A window to the world. Just this expansiveness, you know? It was like we're not just holed up in here all by our lonesome. It's like we're not in this cave. Social media can do the exact same thing. Now, why should you get out of your own headspace? If you are a CEO, you're a top leader, why should you get out of your own headspace in order to create some vacancy? No, I'm not urging you to be an airhead. You know, I'm not going to ask you to go stand in front of a mirror and point to your head and repeat these words, nobody home. I am saying that you do need some space. You need some margin inside your head. Yeah, I could argue. I won't today, but I could argue you also need some margin, some space in your life. Why should you get out of your own headspace as a CEO to create vacancy? Number one, because your perspective will never change until you do. Well, I don't want my perspective to change, you may say. Well, the walls inside your fortress, they are the same. Day after day after day. Same desk, same furniture, same decor, all the same. Have you ever examined your habits? I mean, really closely examined your habits. Well, I'm going to tell you to do that. I'm going to encourage you to do that. Jot down what you do the moment you get up in the morning and just do it until noon. All right, don't try to go all day. Just do it from the time you get up until noon. Every day. I mean, write down a word for Write down a complete sentence if you want to. Just something that you can read and understand and it'll trigger for you. Yeah, that's what I did. It's not for anybody else. No, don't go explaining it. Don't fret about what you're thinking about when you're doing it. Just keep it really simple. And don't pick a day where you've got a trip or some other non-typical work schedule. Just pick an ordinary day, any old ordinary day. If you get up at 6 a.m., then you're going to have listed all the things that you have done from the smallest to the largest until noon. So that's 6 hours of action, 6 hours of behavior for just one day, just one kind of sort of typical day, which you think would be typical. Now, after you've done that, I want you to go back and I want you to look at that list. I want you to carefully look at that list and think about that list. Do you suppose that one day's list that you will have created, do you suppose that's typical? I mean, look it over after the fact. In your gut, you know. I mean, is that day an outlier, or do you think that day kind of accurately portrays, yeah, it's probably typical. That's probably what happens most every day. I'm betting that it's going to be the latter. Yeah, it's probably typical. Your perspective is driven by what you do. So is mine. And what you do is driven by many of these autopilot kind of decisions. Those autopilot decisions, they are mostly good because, well, they prevent us from overthinking things. They prevent us from consciously having to wrestle and grapple with, frankly, decisions that aren't of much consequence anyway. I mean, you get up in the morning, the first thing you do is, okay, well, you go empty your bladder. Okay, you don't think about it. You just need to do it. Maybe if you're like me, then you immediately brush your teeth. You decide what to put on, and you probably, if you're a guy, now if you're a woman, this may be different. But if you're a guy, you don't think much about what you're going to put on that morning, unless there's something special going on, some special event, some special lunch, some special client. It's, you know, grab a suit, grab a tie. You know, your thought process is probably going to be mostly on the tie, if you wear a tie, and you're going to think, okay, when did I wear that last? But you're not going to overthink it, not too much. You basically are kind of sleepwalking through all of this stuff, and that's not a bad thing. It's not because you're asleep, you're awake. It's just these are habits that are driving your behavior, and these habits are based on your perspective, and it fuels your perspective to continue. Just to do today what you did yesterday, which is what you did the day before. And that's why we mostly think what we think and we feel what we feel, and seldom does that change. And many of us, we're not interested in making a change. We're comfortable, real comfortable with our perspective. We're real comfortable with our daily habits, and mostly they're fine. Mostly they're fine. Mostly they serve us well. But sometimes benefits turn into problems, and sometimes a stuck perspective, it can hurt us by preventing us from considering things that we've just not considered before. I'm not talking about clothes. I'm talking about business decisions. Number two, you should get out of your own headspace and create some vacancy, because once you consider a different perspective, you can consider new alternatives. You can also see some new perspectives in that you can see some new opportunities. It's happened to you before. It's happened to you before. Well, let me clarify that. It's happened to you before if you live in any kind of a city, any kind of a metro area, and you've got any kind of a commute to work. You know, maybe traffic is backed up. It's prevented you from taking your normal route, which around here in Dallas-Fort Worth, it can happen. You've taken this other route before, but it's been a while. And as you drive along this new route, you're looking a little more closely at the surroundings because, well, you've not taken this route in weeks. And you notice a restaurant. I've never noticed this restaurant before, but you notice this restaurant. You notice it primarily because it's a restaurant that serves your favorite kind of food. And you're like, I've driven down this road before. I know it's been a while, but I never remember. I wonder if that's new. I wonder how long that restaurant's been here. I had no idea it was even there. Well, curiosity and unfamiliarity are now forcing you to look around, pay closer attention, all because the usual route that you took to work, it was clogged this morning. The same thing can happen to us personally and professionally. We see different things when we get outside our head and our routines. And we consider different solutions and we see new opportunities. It's happened to us before, but we mostly resist it. We intentionally surround ourselves with our people, birds of a feather and all that. We talk to the same people. We listen to the same stuff. We read the same books. We read the same trade magazines. We're in the same associations. We go to the same industry experts. We're listening to all the same people, and we've got our group. And guess what? Our group has a thought process, and we're part of that. Yeah, it's called groupthink. And it's real. And it's real for us. And it's really comfortable, too. Yeah. It's just, it's really comfortable. Number three, we need to get outside of our head and create some vacancy, because once we break outside our head, we break outside our space and we expand. Yep, we expand. And it's called growth. Yep, it's called growth. Well, hello. Welcome to the Grow Great podcast. That's why we're here. The most honest CEOs that I know admit that they enjoy being comfortable. Well, duh, who doesn't? CEOs are smart people. We're all smart people. We all enjoy being comfortable. We all want to be comfortable. Only the craziest people among us, you know, seek out discomfort. You see these people, these survivalists, these guys that go out in the wilderness and they intentionally really put themselves in harm's way and really rough it. Okay, I'm not talking about those people. Right, they're freaks. I've never desired to do that, by the way. I can watch with great admiration those people that can do it, but I'd be the guy, you know, first shot out of the barrel, I'm hungry and I'm eating some berry, and you know, next thing you know, I'm laying on the trail vomiting and near death. I would have no idea. Would be completely lost. No, you know, that's not my roughing it is my idea of roughing it would be a nice hotel. Just saying. But most of us, we really want comfort. And yet sometimes we all do understand, we intellectually and even intuitively, the intuitives like me, we understand that a bit of discomfort can really pay off. It's not that we want the discomfort. It's that we want what the discomfort will get us and give us. It happens when we're sick. We're sick. We go to the doctor. Yeah, if you're like me, you don't like going to the doctor. You don't want to be poked and prodded and given a shot and all the stuff. You know, it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable. Going to the doctor's office is not comfortable. That alone is a discomfort. But we do it. We do it because, well, we already feel bad. So add on another layer of discomfort so we can get better. Okay. It's discomfort, at least with a purpose, right? We can understand that. And it's why we sometimes will work very hard to avoid discomfort when we're not sick. It's one thing to go when you're already feeling bad. Okay, I don't feel good anyway. So pile on one more layer of discomfort and that's okay. But now ask a CEO about that annual physical. I'm not sick. I don't feel bad. I don't want to go through that. You know, or the annual colonoscopy for those of us that, well, it's not annual, but it's every 5 years or whatever it is, unless they've discovered something that they need to keep an eye on. And you should do it. You absolutely should do it. You, if you were an older person and you were not regularly getting a colonoscopy, you're crazy. It's not comfortable, though. I mean, there's nothing comfortable about it. But there's payoff. There's payoff in knowing. There's payoff in the doctor potentially finding something and being able to take care of it early on. Don't wait until we're trading one pain for another. Don't wait until you're uncomfortable already and you're thinking, hey, what's another layer of discomfort? There's value in embracing a degree, and I'm going to emphasize the word degree of discomfort so that we can expand and grow. Now, there are people that I have heard people even recently say, you need to embrace being uncomfortable all the time, always, all the time. Well, I think that's ludicrous. If you want to live your life in misery, go ahead. I'm not talking about misery. I'm talking about growth. I'm talking about a degree of discomfort that has a payoff. I tell you what it's like. It's like these people that brag about hustling and working 18 hours a day. If you want to do it, that's great. Go for it. Many of us don't want to do that. You know, we've got a life. But people can wear it as a badge of honor, this discomfort, this embracing discomfort, as though discomfort in and of itself brings value. No, discomfort is just discomfort. It just is. It's kind of like me. I'm apolitical. I really don't care. I don't. Now I'm finding the presidential, all this, I'm finding it highly entertaining now, but I'm apolitical. I know I'm an odd duck. Sue me. No, don't sue me. Where was I? A buddy told me the other day, he gave me a great piece of advice. You know, when we're marketing, when we're selling, land the plane. Yeah. Just think about it. So I'm flying around, right? And I'm trying to land the plane. And you know, when you forget where you are, it's like, where am I going to land? It happens to us. Hey, podcasters, sometimes it's what we do. We can ramble. Okay. Back on track, back in the cockpit. Okay. I've got my bearings. Got my goggles, you know, back on. When you're sick and you're feeling badly, you can add some discomfort. But when you're not feeling bad, it can be really tough to choose discomfort. And yet there's payoff when we can intentionally do it. There's payoff when we can intentionally say, I want to go from here to there. I understand intellectually, intuitively, and in every other way, I understand that it's not just going to be a bed of roses to go from here to there. There's going to be a little bit of pain, but the pain won't last forever. I'll get through the pain and look at what I'm going to have on the other end. Look at what's going to happen on the other side. Look at how much better off I'm going to be. I'm all about that. So I am not the voice in your earbuds telling you to embrace pain and embrace discomfort just because, you know, so you'll be a more resilient human being. Somebody else can teach you that. Somebody else can coach that. I'm not. We've all got room to grow. And I know this, it takes courage, humility, and determination. And it also takes an openness to admit that we can grow into a better version of ourselves. And we've all got room to grow. You can be spectacular. You could be world class. You could be the top, the number one. Yeah, there's still room for improvement. I mean, doesn't it make sense that top performers, folks like you, doesn't it make sense that CEOs and other top leaders may even have a higher capacity for growth? Well, yeah. CEOs and top leaders are employee number one. Let me repeat this. I have this conversation a lot. CEOs and top leaders are employee number one, which means they have the most to gain and they also have the most to give. It's not about you being a better human being than everybody else in the office. It's about one simple business idea. One simple business truth, an asset or resource, one and the same. This one happens to be you. It happens to be of the human variety. You are an asset. You are a resource. And expanding your connections expands your life. It expands your thinking. It provides you valuable changes in perspective. It expands your ability to see opportunities. It expands your ability to see challenges and to see them in a different way. Protecting your space, yeah, that's got value. But it hinders all that expansion. And if you go all in, if you push all of your chips into the middle of the table on protection, you'll miss out on the expansion that's possible and profitable. I regularly ask CEOs about the investment their company makes in growing people, and many of them, they give me great answers. I mean, they're investing. Some are investing heavily in developing their people, and I can ask them about their own personal development, professional and personal, and I'll get a blank stare. Crickets chirping. And it's quite common to hear a CEO confess that they really don't invest much, if anything at all, in themselves. I mean, they'll quickly follow up by saying something like, it's more important that my people get what they need. And that's when I'll hold up my hand like a sideline coach calling a timeout and go, wait a minute. What did you just say? It's more important. Let me get this right. It's more important that your people get what they need than you get what you need. That 100% of the time, it prompts some rambling and some crawfishing and backtracking as they hunt for the words to make it, trying to make it not sound as bad as it sounds. But it is that bad. And that's the problem. It's very bad. As the top leader, you are the most important human asset in the company. Again, it doesn't make you a better person than anybody else, but it's just true. You're the most important player on the roster. I mean, like a star quarterback, you've got the biggest impact on the performance of the entire team. I mean, just consider the people that you impact. Let's suppose that you have 8 direct reports, and let's suppose that those 8 direct reports each have 3 direct reports. That's 24 executives or leaders who are directly impacted by you. Now, your number may be less, your number may be more, but there's a number, whatever that number is, your direct reports and their direct reports. So for our example, let's say that's 24. Okay, well, now let's say that there are another 65 employees in the company. Okay, we're now up to 89 people whose professional lives are impacted by you because you're the CEO. Now let's add all of our suppliers. Let's add our vendors. Let's add our partners. Let's add the others who, they help us do what we do. They're not directly employed by our company, but we need them. And let's say that you've got 35 suppliers. Let's say you've got 4 financial partners of some sort, insurance people, banks, whatever. And let's say that you got 11 service professionals and other partners. Okay, that's 50 outside partnerships that are impacted by you. And those aren't people, by the way. Those are organizations. Those are companies. And each of those 50, there's countless numbers of people associated with those 50 companies. They represent far more than 50, and we're not yet counting customers. How many of those have you got? And we're not yet counting the family members of your employees. How many of those are there? See what I mean? You, the CEO, you have a direct impact on hundreds or thousands of people. The ripple effect of your growth or your lack of it is enormous. Now, I'm not trying to make you think more highly of yourself than you should. This isn't some ego thing. It's a business mathematical thing. It's quantifiable and it's real. If you don't grow, all those people's lives are negatively impacted. If you grow, they are all positively impacted. Okay, yeah, sure, some more, some less. But all of them are influenced by your behavior, by your decisions, even by your mood. Yeah, your mood. As a business person, if I could offer you a 24x ROI, if I came up to you right now and said, I have got an opportunity for you, and I can guarantee you a 24 times return on your investment, you would not let me out of your office. You would chase me down, and you would make me give you that opportunity. Because you don't have any opportunity anywhere close to that. Well, those 24 executives in your organization, your 8 direct reports and their 3 direct reports each represent the 24X. You represent the investment. There's one of you. There's 24 of them. Invest $1 in yourself, $1 set aside to make you better, $1 to help you expand your connections and improve your perspective, and 24 people are going to feel the impact. If the number one employee in the company, that's you, if the number one employee in the company isn't worth an investment, then I've got a question. Who is? And there's another reason why you, the CEO, have the biggest ROI on personal development. CEOs and other top leaders are top performers, top achievers. Have you ever taken an employee? You probably have an employee right now who's they're doing poorly, and so you put them on a performance improvement plan. You put them on a PIP, performance improvement plan. Have you ever done that? Yeah, sure. We've all done that. Well, does it work all the time? No. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work because the person who's the person who is under the influence of the performance improvement plan, they're in control. I mean, we can't make them do what they need to do in order to be a good performer and keep their job. They're in control of their own choices and their own behavior. Some of them, they choose to listen and they'll comply with what we need them to do in order to achieve. Others, they choose not to. Okay, let's assume that the person complies. You've got them on a performance improvement plan and they comply. Their performance is so weak, it has put their job at risk, or else we wouldn't have them on a performance improvement plan. What kind of improvement, expressed as a percentage, what kind of an improvement do you need to see in them before they're off the hot seat, before you take them off of that PIP? 25%? 35%? 50%? I mean, there's a number. What's the number? It's likely going to be a big number. It's likely, I've probably hit somewhere in the ballpark of the number that you thought. Right? Because it's a big improvement. I mean, you need a big improvement. If you did need a big improvement, why else would you put them on a performance improvement plan? Okay, hold that thought. You're the CEO. You're a top performer. You're a high achiever. I mean, you are nowhere close to a performance improvement plan. A dollar invested in the person on the PIP, maybe it's wasted. Maybe it's not wasted. It might pay off. Slightly, but the payoff's going to be small. Even if it helps the person turn around their performance, the payoff's going to be fairly small. Question, is a 1% improvement in your performance as a CEO, is a 1% improvement in your performance equal to a double-digit improvement in some other people on your team? Or even superior to a double-digit improvement in some people? Yeah. It is. The truth is, it is. Take any thoroughbred racehorse capable of running competitively at the track. Compare that horse with any run-of-the-mill horse, the kind that we see around here in Texas, the kind that we see in pastures all the time. If a trainer can get a 1% improvement in that racehorse, do you suppose that that is infinitely, infinitely more valuable than a trainer who might be able to get a 25% improvement out of that pasture horse? Well, yeah, there is no comparison because one's a racehorse. Hello, CEO. Hello, racehorse. Invest in your own expansion. Grow. Get out of your protection mode. I'm not talking about taking a chance. I'm not talking about rolling the dice. I'm talking about taking an opportunity. I'm talking about making an opportunity. It's making sure that you continue to grow and develop because all the people in your life, they need it. They deserve it. And there you have it, episode 4011. Let me tell you what I'm up to. I am a Vistage chair. You don't know what that is? Well, go to the website, growgreat.com. Up at the top navigation, you will see Vistage, V-I-S-T-A-G-E. And let me tell you, I am forming in Dallas-Fort Worth. So if you're in Dallas-Fort Worth, kind of a little more on the Fort Worth side than the Dallas side, if you are a CEO and you're interested in expanding your connections and growing great, I'd be most interested in meeting you and talking with you. I am forming a new CEO peer advisory group here in DFW, comprised of, I tell you what I'm looking for. I'm looking for climbers. I'm looking for people that are interested in the climb. I don't care if you've made the climb, but you're still interested in climbing. Not really interested in the person that has ascended to the summit and they've planted their flag and now they're just standing there admiring it. Hey, that's great. Bless you, but that's not who I'm looking for. I'm looking for people that still want to climb. And I'm really building a group with a heavy, heavy emphasis on communication. Because so much of our impact on our organizations, so much of our ability to be effective CEOs hinges on our ability to lead people, which means we can engage people, we can communicate with people. I'm going to build the first group in the area focused on that communication and making that stronger. Yeah, so I'm interviewing. Well, I'm working toward interviewing. I'm not interviewing yet, but I'm going to be interviewing CEOs to see who might be suitable for my group. If that's you, I would love to hear from you. Again, go to the website, growgreat.com, and just go to the tab that says Vistage, and it will tell you more. Phone numbers, social media connections, email addresses, it's all right there at the website, ways that you can reach me at growgreat.com. Again, I can't thank you enough for listening. I greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate the fact that you clicked play. I hope you will subscribe to the podcast. I got one other favor to ask. I'd love it if you'd go over to iTunes and leave me a review. You can do that very easily, very simply. Again, go to the website, growgreat.com, and where it says support the podcast, you'll find it right there. You'll find a link. The website is mobile friendly, so if you're on a tablet or a phone, pull it up, growgreat.com. Do it right now. My name is Randy Cantrell. Thanks again, and greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.